2, 1. What's your story?
My story?
Mm-hmm.
All right, just rock and roll. My story is I'm a crazy showman in Savannah, Georgia, that runs a baseball team, but it's more like a circus called the Savannah Bananas. I grew up as an only child, loved baseball, but then realized that a lot of people find the game to be long, slow, and boring. And now I'm trying to make the baseball fun for everyone throughout the world.
Well, that's the short version. What's the long version?
If you want to go very long, you know, again, grew up in Scituate, Massachusetts. And basically my parents got divorced. My dad fought to get custody of me. And I was this kid just trying to get attention, get the love of his father. And so I worked very hard to do well in school, to do well in sports, and was so fortunate. My dad bought a baseball facility, and I was able to play baseball every single day. And I was able to get a college scholarship, went down to Wofford College, a little small school in South Carolina, and with hopes of playing professional baseball. And I started talking to professional teams. I remember I got Christmas cards from the New York Mets, Pittsburgh Pirates, Atlanta Braves. And then something happened. I tore my shoulder. And my junior year, I tore everything, my rotator cuff, my labrum, and I found out I'd never pitch again. And I remember turning the camera on myself because I was filming a documentary, and it was one of the realest moments I ever had, something I worked my whole life for, the one thing I was fighting for my whole life, and it was done. And at 20, 21, 22 years old, I didn't know what I was going to do. So I tried getting into coaching, and that's when I realized that I loved playing baseball but hated watching the game. And it was so boring to me. You know, you can't play. You're sitting there just watching the game. But I got an opportunity about an internship. And I took an internship in Spartanburg, South Carolina, with the worst team in the entire country, a little small team called the Spartanburg Stingers. They had less than 50 fans coming to the games. But it was my job to get people excited about it. So it was then I realized that baseball had to be fun. It had to be entertaining. It had to be exciting. So I was fortunate to have success there. And at 23 years old, I was offered the general manager job of a team in Gastonia, North Carolina. This was the second worst performing team in the entire country. There was only $268 in the bank account my first day. We had 3 full-time employees. Payroll was on Friday. There was only 200 fans coming to the games. And the team had lost over $100,000 the previous year. And I said, what did I get myself into? And so I took that team and I went to the owner. I said, this isn't going to work. The team had been there for 7 years. Nobody knew the team. I made 10 phone calls that first day. And I remember 7 people said, never heard of the team. 2 people said they'd never, ever work with us. And 1 person hung up on me. And so it was then I had the big realization of what business are you in, but what business are you really in? And for us, we weren't in the baseball business. We were in the entertainment business. We had to change. So I called the owner of the team. I said, we're no longer going to be a baseball team. He goes, what do you have in mind? I said, well, our players are going to do choreographed dances. We're going to have grandma beauty pageants. I'm going to get in the dunk tank every game. We're going to serve donut burgers, donut dogs. It's going to be unlike any other baseball game. And he didn't fire me. He said, what do we have to lose? And it was that point at 23 years old, I started trying to change the game. And we started doing things that didn't work, like flatulence fun night, salute to underwear night. I mean, we did the silliest, ridiculous promotions, but people started talking about us. And that's what I realized, that, you know, you got to focus on making it fun. Think about attention. You know, we weren't marketing like everyone else. We were just creating unique, crazy things that created attention. And so it was there that I took that team from 200 fans a game to 2,000 fans a game, started selling out games, did more crazy promotions, and I ended up buying that. And I went from zero debt to buying that and going in through hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt, and bought that team and ended up selling it about a year ago because of the big opportunity here in Savannah, Georgia. And that's when the whole story transitions. But I'm not going to keep talking about this until you tell me where you want to go, my friend.
How did you get to the realization, that pivotal moment of, we're not in the baseball business, we're in the entertainment business? Where did that come from?
Well, again, it's a necessity. Any business, look at what are the biggest problems in the business and do the exact opposite. So I said, whatever's normal, do the exact opposite. So the realization was baseball was not working. And so you think about this, why would we compete in the baseball industry? For people don't know, we're the lowest level of baseball. there's Major League up here. There's Triple A here. There's Double A here. There's High A here. There's Regular A here. There's Low A here. There's top level independent baseball here. There's top level college baseball here. And then there's us here. Like, we're the lowest level. So why would we compete on baseball? We can't win that game. But what's the game that we could win? And that would be entertainment, because no one else is focused on that. So I realized that we're not going to win baseball, but could we be the only game that focuses solely on the entertainment and making it a nonstop show and having crazy promotions on the field, having the fans sing, dance, get pied? We could win that game because no one else is playing it. So it was the only way that I thought we could actually be a sustainable business. And, you know, when people said, I had all these meetings and I say, hey, we're the team in here in town. They go, I hate baseball. I hate baseball. I hate baseball. How many times did I have to hear I say I hate baseball to say, finally, I said, perfect. You'll love our shows. And we changed the language. It was no longer about, hey, enjoy the game. It was enjoy the show. Welcome to the show. Because you can't control if the team loses 12-0. Are people going to enjoy that game? No. But will they enjoy the show? So focus on what you can control. Focus on what you can do. So I had that realization there. And then the results started, fortunately, slowly but surely, taking care of themselves.
Where did you get that creativity from?
I get asked a lot about failures, but again, I walk into situations that are failures. You look at, I think great leaders run to problems. And so here was a problem. We had to solve it. And so again, I believe normal gets normal results. And if you're doing like everyone else, you're going to get results like everyone else. So the Grizzlies, the team then, was doing things like everyone else, promoting how the team did at night. We don't even talk about how the team does. We talk about what happened at the ballpark, the fun, the shows. So I realized that the only way to be successful is to look at the way it was and go the exact opposite. And it's a different mindset. And again, a lot of the blue ocean strategy that we hear, you know, what can you do to go a completely different direction to be successful? And I didn't want to compete. I wanted to compete against myself. And so when you compete against yourself in a game that you can win, it makes it a lot more enjoyable.
Did you just have innately this sense of business acumen and the sense of showmanship? Like, I really want to dig and understand like the essence of it. Like, at your core, where did this come from, and why was it just the natural thing for you to do?
Well, at my core, if you go into the root of me as an only child, parents divorced, my dad working all the time, the root of me was someone to get love, to get attention, to be in the forefront. That's the root that I learned. And I've been able to realize that it's, you know, that fight to get attention and really get noticed and create something special. But, you know, to look at it in the sense, I had to start learning. And just like you, young entrepreneur, I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have a boss. I didn't have someone over me. I had an owner who wasn't as involved. And so my mentors became every book I could get my hands on. And so I started reading religiously. I learned more that first 6 months with that team and 23 years old than I did my entire educational system. And I say that as not a jab at education, but I say that as I read every book on P.T. Barnum. I read every book on Walt Disney. I read every book about marketing. I read every book I could find my hands on customer experience. And so I built this mindset of really thinking differently on being a showman and being that P.T. Barnum that focuses on promotion, getting people attracted and excited, focusing like Walt Disney on the vision. It's kind of fun to do the impossible, as he would say. And I have three posters in my office of P.T. Barnum and Walt Disney and Bill Veeck, one of the most famous baseball innovators back in the 60s and 70s. They created this mindset in me. And I said, you know, let's think, what would P.T. Barnum do? What would Walt Disney do? And they wouldn't play the same game as everyone else. And that's when we just started thinking of what are the most ridiculous things we can do at a ballpark. And again, think about this. As a fan, you go to a ballpark. If you see the same thing everyone else does, are you going to go home and talk about it? No, but if you go to a game and say, wait, the players are dancing? Like, wait, there's a senior citizen dance team called the Banana Nanas. There's a breakdancing first base coach doing the moonwalk in the middle of the game. They have a 20-piece pep band at a baseball game. Wait, there's a DJ that's on a Segway that's playing music throughout the stadium. He's called DJ Peels on Wheels. Like, oh, they have a male cheerleading team called the Mananas, and it says on the back, Dad Bod Cheerleading Squad. We're constantly creating these to think, what will people say? So any business that you have, How do you get people to leave and say, you wouldn't believe what happened today? You wouldn't believe. And that was inspired by P.T. Barnum, Walt Disney. When you left Disney World, you would tell everyone about it. You wouldn't believe what happened at Disney today. P.T. Barnum, you wouldn't believe the characters that we saw. So we have mirrored that and brought that into baseball. We're not doing anything unbelievably innovative. We're getting the ideas and we're just bringing it into our sport. And I've been fortunate to get to know the former CEO of Yum Brands, Taco Bell, KFC, David Novak. And he wrote some amazing books. But what he said is like, the best leaders are pattern thinkers. What do you get from outside your industry and bring inside to your industry? I don't listen to other people in the sports industry. I go listen to other people from Cirque du Soleil, from Blue Man Group, from the Ritz-Carlton, from cruise ships. How do you get outside and bring that in? And that's when you can really create some innovation.
So it seems like a huge piece of this is that customer experience, but really the experience piece of it, where they have, for lack of a better term, an experience that they would get no other place. But how do you really structure the experience or build the experience? I mean, are you trying to go for more comedic value? Do you want to really tug at their heartstrings? Are you trying to inspire them? Like, what are the feelings that you're trying to create in these people during the experiences that you put on for them?
You're asking the right question. And very few people ask that question. You're asking, what are those emotions? How do you make people feel? And for us, that's the North Star. So long story short, the name of our company is Fans First Entertainment. Our mission is Fans First, Entertain Always. And so our North Star is, how are we always putting our fans first and entertaining them? That's what we're doing. But how do you map those emotions? So how do you want people to feel? So think about this. The greatest movies, the greatest shows, it's not just laughter. They tug on your heartstrings. They get you to understand the characters. They surprise and delight. They bring out all these emotions. So after failures, and I haven't been able to talk to the so far. I mean, I was sleeping on an airbed 3.5 years ago. It was down to my last dollar. Literally had to sell our house. We were struggling because we were trying to do like everyone else when we came to our new team in Savannah. And now, fortunately, every game sold out and we have a wait list in the thousands. But it didn't start like that. We were down to, like, we sold one ticket in our first few months because we were trying to be like everyone else until we mapped the emotions. And so for us, everything's the fans' first experience. How do you make people feel? So what's your reimagined customer journey? For anything, whatever business you're doing, what's that first impression? What happens when they buy? Everyone has the same boxes. They see your product, they may buy your product, and then it's done. You win in the transitions. So I'll give you an example. When someone buys a ticket from us, the first thing that happens is they get an email with a video of our staff saying, congrats, you just made the best decision of your day. Right now, as you bought your tickets, our staff of Bananiacs came flooding into the office. They found your tickets in the ticket factory, and they had a banana nana come and perfectly select your tickets and put them on a silk pillow. We raised them up into the air, and the entire staff did the Lion King, Na Savannah, in tribute to your tickets. And then we brought your tickets to our vault where they're in maximum security, and they're ready for you to go bananas. That's the first thing you get. Then you get a thank you call. And so every ticket, you get a thank you call from our staff. Then after that, as you're coming to the ballpark, we'll send you a playlist of music to listen to on the way to the stadium. Then as you're pulling up to the ballpark, the first thing you'll see is our parking penguins. Yes, we actually have people dressed up in penguin costumes parking your car. Does it make any sense? Of course not, but we thought it would be fun. And then you'll hand you a Freezy Pop and says, stay cool tonight. Then as you pass the penguins, you'll see our players out in front of the gate, passing out programs and signing autographs. As you pass the players, you'll see our pep band playing Rocky music or Uptown Funk as you're coming into the stadium. Then you'll have our ticket takers in full banana costumes ripping your banana-shaped tickets that we've once done that are scratch and sniff and smell like bananas. That's all scripted. And then as you come into the ballpark, we script the emotions. So for instance, during the games, our players will leave the dugouts and deliver roses to little girls in the crowd and get down to a knee. Then we'll have the entire stadium doing a stadium roller coaster, which is the weirdest thing in the world. But the whole stadium is going like this in the middle of the game, like they're acting like they're on a roller coaster. We're treating it like a theme park, yet you're not moving. And then at the end of the night, my favorite moment, we have a free s'mores station. That's if people are leaving. The pep band is playing music. All the players are at the gate. They're singing, they're dancing. And we're leaving in this euphoria excitement where people don't want to leave. And that's taken 13 years to craft. But when you create that, you map that experience, people are going home and saying, wow, tonight was special. You wouldn't believe what happened at the ballpark. It was like a circus and a baseball game broke out. It's the most fun we've ever had at a baseball game. And we craft that. We call it your PFT. Every business, what's your perfect fan testimonial? What would you write? If you could craft the perfect fan testimonial, what would you write and reverse engineer it? And that's what we do. You reverse and engineer the experience and reverse engineer the emotions that we hope people create. And again, we've had a lot of challenges getting there, but that's I think one of the reasons why we've been fortunate to have the success we've had.
So it's taken you 13 years to craft this amazing, amazing experience.
We're just getting started. So to give you an answer, we're not there yet. We're competing against ourselves every single day. So I look at what's happening to people in minds right now. You know, we have every night sold out 4,000 plus people. How can we craft the experience in lines? How can we have magicians going through? We actually had a singer start singing songs to people while they're in lines. I look at every single thing because we still have a long ways to go. And I think that's one of the differences is compete against yourself. We're playing this infinite game that it's how do we get better each year? And we're not focused on what other teams are doing. If we were to say our competition, we would say it's Amazon, it's Disney, it's Chick-fil-A. We're aware of what they're doing because you want to understand people want things faster. They want things more convenient. They want it on their time. That's what people want. So we're competing on how do we deliver a faster, better experience. And you know why we're not there yet? Because baseball is still too long, too slow, and too boring. No matter how many characters, no matter how much singing, how much dancing, how much fun, the game can still go over 3 hours. And that's a problem. And we're working on it.
I'm just amazed that it seems like that's a very short amount of time for the that experience that you've crafted. I mean, I think typically it takes, you know, 30 or 40 years to get to that point where you have every little piece scripted out and every single part of the experience is mapped out. I'm so fascinated by that. I can't wait to see what will happen in the next 30 years.
Well, I think it's easier to do when you're clear on who you are and clear on who you are not. Our bathrooms, I mean, our whole stadium is from 1926. It's a 1926 ballpark. FDR gave a presidential address at our stadium. Bob Dylan performed here. It's an old ballpark. So we are not the Ritz-Carlton. We are not the nicest ballpark in the world. So we're not trying to fix that. If you go in our bathrooms, you will not be wowed. However, I hope you'll laugh because, of course, in our bathrooms, we have no farting signs. We have our rival is the Macon Bacon. So, of course, our urinal cakes are Macon Bacon urinal cakes in every men's urinal. In the women's bathroom, there are signs that say drop it like it's hot. I don't even know what that means, but girls thought it'd be funny to put it in there. We're clear on our brand is fun. And so when you look at fun, we look at all of our touch points. How can they be fun? Not how can they be marble countertops and chandeliers and over the top nice things that we can't afford, but we think about fun. And so I think everyone wants to make their business, the experience, the best they can. But if they narrow down on that one little thing that they want to be, and ours is fun, it makes it a lot easier.
I love that. So at this point where it is so broken down, and it seems like you're really digging down into, you know, a very, very fine level of detail, mm-hmm. very precise. Where do you go from here? Like, what do you see as the vision for how you can improve, how you can get better, how you can compete with yourself more? Where will that journey lead?
So a big key for us is we need to surround ourselves with more creative people. We need to continue to actually think about the best performers, the best entertainers in the world. I mean, we're very fortunate. You know, our breakdancing first base coach is from So You Think You Can Dance and, you know, one of the top dancers. And I mean, so when he's doing backflips and cartwheels and crazy dances, he has pushed our show to another level. Our pep band is some of the top musicians that, I mean, we have a sexy saxophone player. We call him the Sexy Sax, Brian. In the seventh, eighth inning, he goes around the stadium serenading women with saxophone, playing songs like The Careless Whisperer and other jams. And it's just a different level that you wouldn't expect at a baseball game. So what am I looking at? I'm looking at How can we have new magicians, different types of musicians, some of the best singers, you know, looking to bring in the most talented people and putting them into a ballpark environment that'll push us to another level. We've heard from fans that I feel like there's just so much going on. I'm always missing something. And my mindset is perfect because most people come to a baseball game and they've seen enough. I want people to have a different experience every time. So our president says this every day, every game is someone's first game. And so whatever business you're in, what if you think about every single time, every day, someone new for the first time is interacting with your business? What do they see? What do they do? Did you take this day off and not give your responsiveness and not give the energy and not give the enthusiasm? My fear, my biggest fear in life is settling. It's settling. It scares the crap out of me because then I feel like I'm not pushing myself, a complacency. So the key is surrounding myself with people that will lift that up and lift our team up. So, where do we take it? The vision? Well, how do you create the greatest show in the world? Just baseball is our platform. How do you take it on the road? Right now, we have only 100,000 people we can take care of based on our schedule. That's our max. How do we take it on the road? How do we share this with more people? How do you get every business to really deliver the entertainment? You know, when you go to a restaurant, no matter what restaurant you go to, that should be an entertainment experience. Yet most times you go, you wait, you sit down, you wait, you get your food, and you leave. You don't get thanked. You don't get entertained. You know, it's every business has an opportunity to entertain people. And I'll tell you one thing that's never going to get old. Everyone wants to be entertained. Everybody needs to be entertained. Entertain means give your attention to someone, all right? Focus on them and make them feel good. So I believe every business in the world, and especially solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, whatever they're doing, they're interacting with more people now at a faster clip than they ever have. But we may get more focused on creating revenue and short-term profits than creating long-term experiences for people. And that's where I think people may lose out in business as well. So that's what we're working on.
So I'm curious because as the host of a show that reaches a lot of people, I'm always trying to make my experience better, always trying to make it more meaningful and give people more. Mm-hmm. So that's what I wanted to ask you. How would you make it better? How would you improve?
So a few different things I do. First, what are the big problems in the industry that you're in? So whatever industry you think about this, you know, in your industry, whether it's podcasting, what are the challenges? Right now, it's very easy to see there's millions of podcasts coming out every day. So what's probably the biggest challenge? Maybe differentiation. So I'd write down, what are all the normal things that a podcast does? Write down a list of every normal thing that a podcast does. This is how we came up with having our players dance. Normally, players play baseball. Nope, we're going to have them dance. So write down all the normal things that a podcast, that an author, that a speaker, what do they do? What would be the exact opposite? Because the way brands are going to stand out in the future is by differentiation. So write down those normal things. Then I'd write, all right, what's your boring list? Create, what are the most boring things about the industry you're in? And then now write down what the opposite of that. And so we start with that normal and opposite list and the boring and opposite list. And that's how you can start creating some of these ideas of how to stand out and differentiate. And then we go through what's the current customer journey and then the reimagined journey. So this is what happens when someone interacts with your brand. This is the first touch. Your website. Does it stand out? Is it different? Will people talk about it? Or is it a typical website like everyone else? The contact form, the email they get. Is it video-based or is it just a regular email? What happens next? After you do a podcast, do they hear from you again? What's that experience? So we try to map all those things, and it's taken, I mean, again, we're still learning every day. But when you start reimagining, all right, what would get people to talk about? You know, what gets people excited? So for instance, are they going to talk about you because of you were like every other podcaster? Or are they going to talk about you because of the experience you provided, not just one-on-one, but when the transitions in between afterwards? Some of the biggest people, podcasters I've been a part of, they continue to be connected with me and send me cool things. And hey, I just want to connect you with this person. Hey, here's a book I was thinking about. It's like, you stand out. So there's ways to stand out. It's just, that's a loaded question. And I think it starts with looking at what's normal and do the exact opposite.
I think that's so powerful because what I would imagine that most people do is they go on YouTube. If they're trying to do something new, like podcasting, for example, they go on YouTube, they look up best practices, they try to model the people who are already doing it. And then as a result, you kind of get the same cookie cutter experience, just a lot more of it.
Yeah, 100%. And, well, and look, whoever you are, amplify it. So obviously you're talking to a guy in a crazy yellow tuxedo. I own 7 of these. This is my uniform. Like when I played baseball, all right, I put on a uniform, it was game time. I wear this every day because I believe every day is showtime and you're always on stage. That's me. That's not 99.999% of people. I'm not normal. All right. I get it. I'm not normal and that's fine. But everyone has something that makes them stand out. And so just getting to know you just a little bit now, the curiosity, all right, that you have, and you can just tell how hungry you are to learn. So how do you amplify that? And that's what you're known for. That's just me on a second, you know, but if it's something else, what is that? So if you talk to some of your best friends, like, hey, what is the most unique things about me? If you're not self-aware to know that, and it takes a while, then amplify that, go all in on that. And it's okay to be polarizing. Everyone tries to be fit in. We're born to stand out. So why do we want to fit in like everyone else? When you fit in, you just become like everyone else. So I think, what do you want to be known for? And how does it fit your personality? And I think everyone should look at that, not just for themselves, but for their brand. And so it's a good question. It's a lot of self-awareness. But I was just like, hey, this is me. And a lot of people are going to be put off by this crazy, outgoing, loud showman. But that's okay. Because I'd rather be that person. I have more fun being that person and dancing with fans and pieing fans than the person that just acts like a typical owner and walks around the stadium and says, oh, it's a good night at the ballpark. That's not me.
That's awesome. And I think the fact that it really does, at least a lot of what you're saying, I believe, comes down to self-awareness. I think that is such an important message because you're right. I mean, if we don't even know who we are, we can't even go all in on that. There's no way that we can, you know, pour ourselves into that and get better because we don't even know who you are in the first place.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I struggled with that for a long time. And I was able to start changing my mornings and changing my focus and started every morning writing, reading, listening to podcasts and working out. And for 2 years of writing, you know, I believe everyone should write every day. Just write what's on their mind, write the things they're thinking about, write, you know, anything that they're dreaming about. When you start doing that, the clarity you have in your life, there you go. There's your notebook. It's everything. And a big realization, aha moment happened for me this past year. And I started my energy list. And now our whole team does it. And I said, I don't necessarily want to know just things you like and think you don't like. Write down what gives you energy. And so literally I wrote down, I was like, this right now gives me energy. So sharing. All right, sharing and creating, which we're doing right now because we're creating and sharing. That gives me energy. So every day I make sure I'm doing that. Growing. So reading, listening to podcasts, that gives me energy. So I'd share that every day. Gratitude gives me a ton of energy. So every day I started in 2016, the thank you experiment. And I started writing one thank you letter every single day. I haven't stopped because the reality is it may be the most selfish thing I do. Because I've written over 1,000 thank you letters, but it gives me so much energy and it makes me feel amazing about the contribution that I can make on people that have made an impact on me. So there it is, sharing, growing, creating, and gratitude. So most people, their days are filled with tasks of what they have to do, putting out fires. And they look at the end of the day and how was your day? Ah, I'm tired. Well, if you're doing things that just give you energy, you won't be tired at the end of the day and you'll do more of it, which will make you even more successful and make you even more happier. So our whole staff does it. They have energy lists. And I check with them at the end of the day. I go, guys, how are we doing on our energy list? Did we do things that gave us energy or did we not? Because that's what makes a company really thrive, I think, is people doing what they love that gives them energy.
So I'm curious because, again, you know, I think I really have never met anybody quite like you before. So I'm really fascinated. With the energy lists and the self-awareness and the journaling and the writing and the reading, I mean, these are a lot of things that when you talk to very, very successful people, and, you know, I feel very, very grateful that, you know, a large number of them, like yourself, choose to spend some time with me. And a lot of people talk about these kinds of things. So how did you develop this routine? How did you come about building this sort of behavior that empowers you so much?
Because my life was, I was struggling. I think the only way people make real changes is if they realize how much they're struggling and the challenges that they're going through. And I realized I was so focused on other people pleasing, like, all their priorities and doing everything. I was waking up every morning. The first thing I did is I looked at my phone, scroll through social media, scroll through it. And I realized I was in a bad mood. And, you know, it's proven. If you watch 5 minutes of the news in the morning, just 5 minutes, you'll be in a worse mood at the end of the day. And so the reality is I wasn't watching the news, but I was watching the news by seeing what everyone was posting and talking about. And I was just starting my day, not on purpose. And so it got to a point where I wasn't being my best version of myself. I was treating my, I think it was then fiance, and you know, I was treating her not the way she's been treated. I was just not being a great person, a great leader. And so I, you know, came across the Miracle Morning, and I said, I need to change. And I started doing it. I just started realizing my happiness level was different. So I started getting into a habit of writing, reading, running every morning. And it's the only thing you can really control is the mornings. You know, I'd win the morning, win the day. So I started controlling it. And the results just started coming immediately. I mean, I started just feeling better. And so, you know, when you go through challenges, it made it easier. When just a few years ago, we were down to our last dollar and living on an airbed, it didn't feel hard. People were like, you're down to your last dollar. You had to sell your house. You're on an airbed. Your team in Savannah might fail. But my wife and I, we were confident. We believed in what we were doing because we just didn't challenge. It's so hard to say because we just believed in what we were doing every single day because we were staying positive. We were staying optimistic. And just the other day, we had a very long season and at the ballpark till 3 a.m, we have a 1-year-old son and it was wearing on us. We were going through fumes. I mean, entertaining 4,000 people every night. It's, I love it, but it also can wear on you a little bit. And we realized we were down a little bit. And I said to my wife, I go, why don't we just choose to be happy every day? And so we said, all right, starts today. It was about 5 days ago. And I said, we're choosing to be happy. And it's very easy to focus on the things you don't have. Focus on the things that go wrong. You get 5,000 reviews, but you get one negative review, you talk about that one. Everyone does it. But I said, no, we're just going to do that. And so now every day we choose to be happy. Something goes wrong, move on. We choose to be happy. It sounds so simplistic, but I'll tell you, the one thing you control is your thoughts. And if you're constantly saying, choose to be happy, do things that give you energy, you know, give gratitude. It's a game changer. And it's hard. It's hard because you get hit in the face a few times. Things don't go well. But when you look at the scheme of things, that'll never matter. And if I can share you a quick aside about this, people ask me the best advice I've ever received. I never give a straight answer because I'm never, you know, I never give like just, hey, it's just this, because I can never do things the normal way. But 6 years ago, my father battled two forms of cancer. And it was, one was outside of his liver that was the size of a pear. It was a tumor that was huge. And he had to go through an extensive year of treatment. And he went to the hospital. They went to the hospital, start getting treatment. And he goes to tells the nurse, he goes, this is just going to be, this will be a challenging year, but next season is going to be great. The nurse is like, yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. So every day I talked to my dad and I asked him, Dad, how you doing? He said, great. Every day. One day he said, Jesse, I'm good. And I talked to my stepmother. I said, well, he just said good. He goes, well, it was probably one of the worst, most challenging days. The chemo, he's never been sicker. He didn't know if he was going to make it. It was bad. And he said, good. The next day, Dad, how you doing? I'm great. And he ended up battling that cancer. And at the end, he's complete remission. The doctor said he was one of the most positive patients they've ever had. And I think to that, my dad, who's now 70 years old, who's literally working out every day, the happiest guy I've ever met in my life. He battled cancer and was literally putting poison in his system every single day. And what was his response? He was great. So these little things, these small things that we think are the end of the world, a bad email, we miss a sale. How could we ever, ever let that bother us and change how we treat people during a day? So the best advice I've ever received from my dad is be positive always. And so that's kind of a, he's been my biggest hero, and I try to think about that every day.
I believe you mentioned earlier how being an only child, you're always going and trying to get more attention, and you're trying to figure out ways to stand out. Mm-hmm. And I believe you mentioned how with your dad in particular, it was it was really, really meaningful for you to, you know, to have his maybe recognition,
his love,
and his love. Do you feel like that has been one of the most important driving factors to everything that you've done?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that someone's need for love can be a positive driving factor. But now that I really grasp it, he never said, "I love you" when I was a kid. He never said that, but he loved me more than anything. He just never said it. And so I always wanted to push, "Dad, you know, I did this. And even to this day, you know, I try to make my dad proud, and that's okay. You know, I think that's okay. If we're trying to make our parents proud every day, there's a lot worse things that out there than that. So, it was a driver for me. Now I have a young son, and I think about how I show him love every day and how I, tell him I love him, and because I know how important it was. And I wonder, will that affect him in a different way? Will he not push to, make so many people happy and make a difference? Maybe it will, but, I think, we'll find out from that. But the reality is, it's like, why do I love at the end of the night when there's thousands of people leaving the ballpark and I'm hugging them and I'm high fiving them and I'm thanking them? It's the love. I feel like I want to give them love, and I also want it back. I want to feel like I'm a part of something. As an only child, no brothers, no sisters, you know, it's, you want that. And I think we all need that. And that's why I married an amazing woman who has three brothers and has a big family, so I can be a part of that. But it sounds crazy, like, oh, I just need love. I need to be around love. But it's okay. I've built it into one of my greatest strengths. I think that's why I try to get 4,000 people out here every night and why I try to spread the news. And so Philip McKernan talks about your greatest pain, your greatest gift lies next to your greatest pain. And I had some wounds as a kid trying to fight for that love and challenges with my birth mother and all that. But when you grasp and understand it, boy, you can bring some great things. And look at you. You're making me go deep today, but I think that's really what matters.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you being willing to go there and talk about these things.
Of course.
So clearly you've done a lot of introspection. You've done a lot of work on yourself. You've built an amazing organization with just one of the coolest cultures I've ever had the pleasure of learning about. But what questions are still on your mind? I mean, what are you, you've learned from the P.T. Barnums, the Walt Disneys. Where, what have you discovered along your path of working with all these things, and what questions do you still have on that path?
The biggest focus now is I'm focusing on our people, on our team. You know, if you want to create a great organization, if the fans first, people don't realize that. I look at our people as the biggest fans. So our team, our employees, the people that work for us. So what I'm focused on now is how do I deliver and our team deliver the most value to them and create an experience like they've never had. And we do a lot of things of surprise and delight with our people. But if you really want to create the best experience for your customers in the world, you better create the best experience for your people in the world. And that's where it starts. So it's always about reverse engineering. I reverse engineer everything. So I'm constantly thinking, what does that amazing experience look like for our people when they first show up in the interview process, their first day, even on their last day? And we had some people leave. We had zero turnover our first 3 years with millennials. It's unbelievable. You know, our oldest staff member is 28 years old now. Everyone started at 22, 23, 24. And what about when someone leaves? Most companies, when they leave, see ya, goodbye. But we said, no, this is a last impression. And so we had people leave this past year, and we planned this huge celebration where everyone on our staff writes a thank you letter with all the memories that they had of them. Then we show a video of all their best moments. And people who know the Savannah Bananas culture, we're constantly videoing everything. We have video everything. And so there were some hilarious moments that we show. Then we have a plaque of all their accomplishments and great moments. And we read those letters to people. We read and we celebrate it. So that last day, they know, even though they're leaving us, that they feel cared for. And so I think that's what drives me now, is how do we put on the greatest show for our people? How do we make them feel like they're on top of the world so then they can deliver the greatest show for our people or our customers? And so the questions I'm asking is, what does that look like? What is the greatest organization look like that cares for their people more than anyone else? And so we got a long ways to go, because it's a long journey. But, you know, I think that's everyone asked for. Every leader, your people, your employees, they don't work for you. You work for them. And whether you're growing leaders, whether you're help developing them, whether you're just making them better people, your job is to take care of them. So every job you have, you said you mentioned your team before here. My question for you is, they probably have a job description for you, but do you have a job description to lead them? And so when you think about what your job as a leader to lead them, that's a game changer. And we just learned this recently hearing from some of the Chick-fil-A executives, and that's what they do. So now I'm questioning, what can I do to be a better leader? So that gets into deep. I'm the crazy guy in the yellow tuxedo. I love to have fun. That's what we've built this business on, fun and show. But now the heart is what's going to keep this business sustainable and keep us making a difference and have a legacy. And I know you're a young guy, but I know you're already thinking about legacy. And I think it's okay to think about that. But legacy comes from the heart. And legacy comes about the people that you touch every day. And so I don't want to cross the finish line alone. I know you don't want to cross the finish line alone. No one wants to get on top of the mountain and be by themselves and look around and say, this is great, but who's there with me? And so that is one of the big things I'm thinking about, is when I'm long and gone, you know, what about all these people that we touched? What are they doing? How are they still making a difference? And when you reverse engineer, it changes your given days every single day. And that's why, my friend, why I'm here with you is sharing something that's going to hopefully be evergreen and go for a long time. Because when you share your beliefs, who you are and what you stand for, those last and those carry on. And that's why I believe in what you're doing and having these amazing conversations, because they will make a big difference for many years to come.
Well, thank you very much for saying that. And, you know, I want to thank you so, so much for coming on the show today and being a part of this with me. It's been very special. And I just want to say thank you.
Yeah, I've had a lot of fun. I appreciate you.
Awesome. Well, I just have one more question for you, then we'll wrap it on up.
Sure.
But what question should I be asking you that I just wouldn't think to ask?
If you want better answers, you need to ask better questions. And that's a question I ask on my show all the time. What matters most? And that's a deep question. That's a deep question. But, you know, what matters most to you? And we just talked about it a little bit. But I think when you can get to the root of what matters most to people and what matters in the most to making a difference, I think that's pretty interesting. And that's where I would go. But I've never been asked that question. I ask that question a lot. I've never been asked that question. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you very much again. And to everybody who's watching and listening, I want to thank y'all very, very much. Your time is very valuable. So I'm very grateful that y'all choose to share it with us today. So thank you for sticking with us to the end and for being here. I love you guys and gals so, so much. Thank you, Jesse. And I'll see y'all on the next episode. Take care now.